And in fact, on March 4th, 1825, the Board of Visitors of the University of Virginia, under Jefferson's direction, passed the following proviso. Whereas, it is the duty of this board to the government under which it lives, and especially to that of which this university is the immediate creation, to pay a special attention to the principles of government which shall be inculcated therein, and to provide that none shall be inculcated which are incompatible with those on which the constitutions of the state and of the United States were genuinely based. So those works which are not politically orthodox will be eliminated from both the curriculum and the university. And for this purpose, it may be necessary to point out specially where these principles are to be found legitimately developed. Resolved, that it is the opinion of this board that as to the general principles of liberty and rights of man in nature and in society, the doctrines of Locke in his essay concerning the true original extent and end of civil government, and of Sidney in his discourses on government, may be considered as those generally approved by our fellow citizens. And that on the distinctive principles of the government of our state and of that of the United States, the best guides are to be found first in the Declaration of Independence, not surprisingly, as the fundamental act of union of these states. Secondly, the book known by the title of The Federalist, and here he thinks specifically of Madison's contributions. And third, the resolutions of the General Assembly of Virginia in 1799 on the subject of the Alien and Sedition Laws. Those are the Virginia resolutions that Madison drew to match Jefferson's Kentucky resolutions, which, as we've seen, championed the doctrine of not only states' rights, but nullification. And finally, the valedictory address of President Washington as conveying political lessons of peculiar value. And that in the branch of the school of law, which is to treat on the subject of civil polity, these shall be used as the text and document of the school. And indeed, the professor of law must swear loyalty to Jefferson's principles on the Missouri question. And if they're not willing to do that, he simply won't allow them to be hired. And there are other aspects to Jefferson's curricular meddling that are a little disturbing. As a young man, he'd read Hume. Hume's History of England was one of the most popular works of the time, and in fact, it made his fame for good reason. It was a marvelous read. It still is. And it's certainly a surprise. He contradicts almost all of the Whig history that had been written prior to him. He writes to William Duane in 1810, "Everyone knows that judicious matter and charms of style have rendered Hume's history the manual of every student. I remember well the enthusiasm with which I devoured it when young, and the length of time, the research and reflection which were necessary to eradicate the poison it had instilled in my mind." And that's because Hume's position is quite close to that of Hamilton's. Well, he's got a solution. Baxter, one of whom Tooke's associates in persecution, has hit on the only remedy the evil admits. He has taken Hume's work, corrected in the text his misrepresentations, supplied the truths which he suppressed, and yet has given the mass of the work in Hume's own words. It is wonderful how little interpolation has been necessary to make it a sound history, and to justify what should have been its title, to wit, Hume's History of England abridged and rendered faithful to fact and principle. Can we not have it reprinted here? It would be about 4 volumes, 8 octavo. Well, there's another interesting feature that I mentioned before, that his desire to have Anglo-Saxon taught. And the reason is because Jefferson is coming increasingly to be a forebear to what will be the Teutonic germ theory of liberty, that it was the Germanic peoples who came from the black forests of Europe and with the spirit of barbaric liberty and freedom and brought it wherever they carry them. And therefore, that's where the source of liberty in England is, from the Anglo-Saxon. And he expresses this to Major John Cartwright in 1824. There are some novelties in it, his plan for the University of Virginia. Of that of a professorship of the principles of government, you express your approbation. They will be founded in the rights of man. That of agriculture, I'm sure you will approve. And that also of Anglo-Saxon. As the histories and laws left us in that type and dialect must be the textbooks of the reading of the learners, they will imbibe with the language their free principles of government. As he states, "It has ever appeared to me that the difference between the Whig and the Tory of England is that the Whig deduces his rights from the Anglo-Saxon source and the Tory from the Norman." And I want to conclude by suggesting the following. In dealing with his legacies and trying to put his house in order, as it were, Jefferson is grappling with problems that are not unique to him, They are the problems of the new nation. They are the problems that America will grapple with throughout the 19th century. And they are the legacies with which we still deal to this very day.